Welcome to the Deep Dive. We've got some really interesting source material today. It's excerpts from a mystery novel, The Kill Circle, by David Freed.
Yeah, and this isn't our usual nonfiction analysis. It's a dive into fiction, specifically a Cordell Logan mystery.
Right. And these pages, they drop you straight into this really complex world.
Absolutely. You've got retired spooks, mysterious deaths popping up, and these hints of old conspiracies, maybe going back decades.
Exactly. So our goal here, our mission for this deep dive, is to kind of unpack these excerpts, pull out the key info on the characters, the plot as it unfolds.
You get to the bottom of the mystery presented here, but also maybe think about why the author includes certain details, how they sort of mess with your expectations.
Mm-hmm. We'll look at the main character, Cordell Logan, his pretty unusual life.
The people he runs into are quite something.
Definitely. And there's this central investigation, seems tied to a big historical event. And, well, the way it wraps up is, let's just say it's not what you'd expect.
Prepare for some twists. It's layered.
Okay, let's get into it. We have to start with Logan, Cordell Logan. The excerpts kick off with this this really intense hunting scene.
Oh, yeah. Him and his dad, Brick, snow, river, fallen trees, tracking that wounded elk.
You immediately get this sense of, well, capability, connection to the outdoors. Brick, especially, with his tracking knowledge, seeing the bubbles in the blood.
Knowing exactly where that elk went. It sets a baseline for competence, right?
But then, bam, we're yanked into his current life. He's got this busted foot, needs foot cream.
Running errands at CVS.
Yeah.
It's such a jarring contrast to the hunter image.
Totally. And that contrast is kind of a theme. There's that street fight. He drops these witty lines like, are you talking to me or setting parameters?
Right, like he's going to negotiate.
But then he just takes the guy down. Fast, mm-hmm. Efficient, brutal almost.
And he thinks about maturity, picking battles, but also,
yeah,
you know, not just standing here waiting to get shot. The skills are still there, maybe just dialed back.
It seems like he's living this quiet, sort of absurd life. Claims he runs a thriving business, but lives in a garage.
And he owns that plane, the duck. Feels like its own character.
Oh, and the cat, Kittyit. We have to talk about the cat.
Oh, Kittyit. The orange blimp.
Antisocial, hard to handle, that whole vet visit. Dr. Lucero, the special gloves.
The HTH gloves, yeah.
Mm.
And the cat bites him anyway.
Yeah.
Cost him over $200 just to find out the cat's not chewing right.
It's this completely one-sided relationship. Logan seems devoted. The cat just tolerates him. Barely. What's that about?
And maybe he needs something uncomplicated to care for.
Yeah.
Even if it draws blood.
Could be. And then Mrs. Shmulevitz, the landlady.
With the birth certificate in Roman numerals. Mm. Great line.
Uses a walker, but she's sharp, joking about male enhancement, churning butter.
She looks out for Kittyit, maybe feeds him a bit too much.
Probably contributes to the blimp status.
Yeah. And she seems to know when Logan's bothered by something. She's perceptive.
So these two, the cat and the landlady, they kind of anchor his weird domestic life.
But then you learn about his past. Alpha.
Right. This direct action, highly classified Tier 1 Ultra unit post 9/11.
Tier 1 Ultra. I mean, for anyone listening, that's basically the tip of the spear. Top secret direct action operators.
Their mission, the text says, was just rid the world of evil. Pretty stark.
No red tape. Just action. And before that, Air Force fighter pilot, career ended by a football injury.
There's also mention of Savannah, his dead partner, and Buzz, his old alpha buddy, implies Logan is still wallowing. Hints of trauma.
So you've got this mix, the mundane, the funny home life, and this incredibly intense secret past. That's Logan.
And into this world walks Lane Sterling.
And the description is immediate. Stunning, Eurasian, mid-40s. Specific details.
But the key things are the clothes. Sensible pantsuit, flat she could run in, a bag that might hold a pistol.
Instantly tells you she's more than just looks. She's operational.
Her knowing Buzz is the immediate flag, right?
No.
Connects her straight to Logan's past, the agency, CIA, basically.
It's heavily implied. And their first meeting is gold. She's so direct.
Hates his chili. How could you even eat this stuff?
Disgusted. And then, boom, offers him a job. $500 a day plus expenses.
She's definitely testing him, pushing buttons, the thriving business comment while he's standing in his garage.
Yeah, a little condescending. She mentions patriotism, but the text is pretty clear his physical reaction to her is a big factor, too.
More woman than I'd seen in a long time. It's right there.
And you see her competence shine through later. Calm, reading micro expressions. Knows football stats, weirdly.
Handles food poisoning, gets in that dodgy plane.
Stays cool when there's smoke in the cockpit, spots a potential runway. She's sharp. a good foil for Logan's eccentricity.
Then there's Buzz, the old partner from Alpha.
Seems like he's moved up, maybe a handler or a supervisor at Langley now.
He's pragmatic. Time is money. But still looks out for Logan. Mentions the wallowing again.
He's the bridge, providing resources like that forensics lab contact. Talking to Sterling's bosses.
So these characters, they all converge around this mystery Sterling brings. Two CIA analysts are dead, Rico Paris and Joe Zyra.
And the Crucial Link. Both were Red Lancers, part of an internal group, and both were digging into the JFK assassination files.
Paris died in a car crash. Blizzard, Mountain Road in Colorado. Zyra, a month before, hit and run in Phoenix.
So the question hangs there. Accidents or murders?
Sterling gives the context. That JFK Records Act from 92, deadline coming up in 2017 for releasing classified documents, including CIA stuff, Howard Hunt files.
Right, so the timing feels significant within the story.
And the theory Sterling floats in the novel involves Howard Hunt's supposed big event confession.
Yeah, this alleged deathbed story about a CIA-linked conspiracy to kill Kennedy. Important to stress, that's the novel's plot point, not presented as fact.
And the physical clue tying it all together is this book, Lancer's Last Day, The CIA and the Murder of John F. Kennedy by P.S. Plaisance.
Shows up in Paris's cabin, Tomasello's place. Logan later sees it in photos from Zyra's apartment. It's everywhere.
The book itself, described as, well, not great.
Like an eighth grader wrote it. Factual errors gets the date of JFK's death wrong.
But the conspiracy theory inside is wild. LBJ, Cuban operatives hired by the CIA, a mafia hitman in the limo trunk, Jimmy the Beak Fiviano.
Claims the CIA doctored records to protect LBJ. Just out there stuff.
And the author, P.S. Plaisance, is anonymous. Cites safety concerns, explosive contents, standard stuff, but it takes a turn.
So the investigation starts with Paris's crash in Spruce County. Sterling uses that insurance cover story, Mutual of Lexington.
And they meet Sheriff Harlan Weber, the local law.
Stocky guy, crayon drawings, Boy Scout plaques, the world's greatest grandpa mug. It feels performative.
Look, he's trying too hard to seem like a good old boy. He dismisses it as an accident. Poor fool.
But Logan's instincts are buzzing. He sees damage on Cyril Tomasello's Jeep.
Tomasello being Paris's friend. Ex-Marine, race car driver, drinker.
Logan thinks the Jeep damage could match hitting Paris's Porsche. So he bluffs Tomasello, mentions finding body filler.
And Tomasello totally bites, gets agitated, denies everything, bolts from the bar.
And immediately calls Sheriff Weber. That's the tell.
Then bang, Tomasello gets stabbed to death right after Logan talks to him.
And the cops reveal Tomasello used to be a deputy for Weber. Another connection.
Uh-oh.
Meanwhile, Sterling's colleague confirms Zyra's death was definitely a hit and run.
So two dead analysts, both looking at a JFK, both connected to this book. And now Tomasello, linked to Paris and Weber, is dead too. Coincidence looks pretty unlikely now.
The story then dives into this really tangled web around Samantha McBride. She first shows up as Alessandra Munoz.
Paris's fiance. Found at his cabin, acting vulnerable. Says she knew nothing about his CIA past, needs cash. But she has gun.
Classic damsel in distress, maybe. Feels off from the start.
Totally off. Logan digs around, finds a restraining order against Sheriff Weber, followed by someone named Adine Fitzgerald.
This seems random, right?
Until he talks to Gloria Gatley, who spills the beans. Adine Fitzgerald is JFK's second cousin.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, worked in real estate, moved near Angel Falls with her new boyfriend, Rico Paris, after she split from Weber.
Whoa, so Adine Fitzgerald is Alessandra Munoz, who is with Weber and is related to JFK. This is getting complicated.
Well, Alessandra later fesses up about the Adine Fitzgerald part. Says she made it up to dodge a bill collector.
Made up being related to JFK?
Apparently. Said it gave her status, but it gets hard to keep the line straight. Admits she isn't related, just wished she was. Mm-hmm. This whole identity thing is central to her character.
Okay. And what about Sheriff Weber? That wholesome act.
Starts to crumble. Logan finds out the CBI Colorado Bureau of Investigation thinks Weber might be involved in four homicides.
Four. Okay, now we're talking.
Yeah. Two old mob murders down in Florida back in the 60s. Victims were informants, killed with a .22. Weber had an alibi, but inconclusive.
Vadis.
His first wife disappeared off a cruise ship.
Just vanished.
Yep. A crew member suspected she was pushed overboard. Not enough proof to charge him, but still. Adds to a very dark picture.
So Logan confronts him.
Oh, yeah. Makes veiled threats. Hints about mob ties, drug money, embezzlement. Weber gets furious. Logan definitely hit a nerve.
Okay, so all these threads are swirling. The deaths, the aliases, Weber's shady past. How does it come together?
Through Bartolks, the postal clerk Logan catches smoking weed.
Right, the minor character.
Turns out he stole mail, including a priority box Tomasello sent right before he died.
Why'd he steal it?
He was scared it had dirt on Sheriff Weber. Threw it away, hoping to curry favor with the sheriff, maybe get out of trouble for the weed.
But he tells Logan where he threw it.
Yeah, says it's still in the post office dumpster. That's the key.
So Logan goes dumpster diving. He even thinks, you know, this was standard procedure back in the day, intelligence gathering.
The old skills come back. But it's risky.
Super risky. Weber and his deputies show up, catch him in the headlights. He has to make a run for it.
Which pretty much confirms Weber is involved, or at least covering something up desperately.
But Logan gets the box. And inside?
Another copy of Lancer's Last Day.
There it is. The aha moment.
Exactly. The book isn't just background, it's the motive, somehow. It connects Paris, Zyra, Tomasello, P.S. Plaisance, this is the key.
And Logan puts it together. The book, the aliases Alessandra used, her living with Paris, the obsession with the Kennedy name.
He realizes Sam McBride Alessandra Dean must be P.S. Plaisance.
So he heads back to her cabin to confront her, gets stuck in the snow first, has that weird run-in with those guys looking for gold.
Malik and Zion. Odd little interlude, almost reminds you the world is full of random danger.
Right. But he gets to the cabin, confronts Sam McBride, tells her he knows about Paris and Zyra being CIA.
And then she drops the bombshell. The real reason.
It wasn't about JFK or the CIA.
Nope. She killed Paris and Zyra because they gave her book bad reviews online.
Wait, what? Bad reviews?
Bad reviews. She wrote Lancer's Last Day as P.S. Plaisance, and they slagged it off. She was planning to go after other negative reviewers, too.
That's unbelievable.
Her explanation is wild. All the effort she put into the book, the anger at being ridiculed publicly.
Mm-hmm.
She says something like, you never see a statue devoted to a goddamn critic.
So the whole elaborate setup, the CIA connection, was just incidental because the first victims happened to be CIA.
Seems so. It's this incredibly mundane motive, wounded pride, artistic ego driving deadly violence, completely unexpected.
Then things get violent at the cabin.
Oh, yeah. She shoots Logan in the leg. He goes into survival mode, belt tourniquet, stuffing the wound.
And the dog bites him.
Cuddles. The dog bites his good leg, adding insult to injury.
When he gets rescued.
Yeah, Detective Weiss and backup arrive. Buzz at Langley had put out an alert based on Logan's analysis connecting the book to the victims. So they were looking.
And McBride confesses.
He admits everything. Tells the CIA guys her motive. Insists they call her Dr. McBride. That detail tells you a lot about her self-perception.
And the pen name, P.S. Plaisance.
Came from her high school English teacher, Patricia Sewell Plaisance. Someone who actually encouraged her writing. Kind of poignant, really.
Logan gets the last word with her, right? Something about anger.
Yeah. You won't be punished for your anger, Sam. You'll be punished by it. Powerful line.
So what happens right after?
Sterling's in the hospital. Infection from her own injuries. Logan's recovering, too. Things quiet down a bit.
And Sterling moves on.
Professionally, yes. The text says she gets assigned new cases, missing officer, administrator death. And she doesn't call Logan after she gets out of the hospital.
Suggests maybe that intense connection was just situational for her.
Could be. But then right at the end, she throws him a curveball.
What's that?
Suggests they start a private investigator agency. Together. Maybe down in Rancho Bonita.
Whoa. Okay. How does Logan react?
He considers it. Acknowledges she's capable. The location's okay. Certainly worse places to live. Leaves the door open.
So summing this up, we dove in expecting this big conspiracy thriller tied to the JFK assassination and the CIA.
Right. We followed all those threads. Logan's past, Sterling's investigation, the deaths, the aliases, Sheriff Weber.
The small town secrets clashing with spy games.
But the ultimate reveal, the core motivation, it was just incredibly, bizarrely personal. Anger over bad book reviews.
It completely subverts your expectations. It makes you reconsider what truly drives people to extremes. It's not always grand conspiracies. Sometimes it's something deeply personal, almost petty, amplified by whatever's going on inside someone.
And when you contrast that fictional outcome with the real author's acknowledgments, David Fried thanking his own English teacher, thanking his supportive partner, Dr. Betsy Bates Fried.
It paints this really interesting picture, the fictional writer destroyed by criticism versus the real writer acknowledging the power of support.
It leaves you thinking, doesn't it? About creativity, identity, how we handle criticism, and who influences us. Can negative feedback really push someone over the edge like that? Or, like in the novel, does it just expose something that was already broken? It's definitely something to mull over how the most dangerous motives can hide behind the most unexpected, even mundane, facades.